If you are any type of content creator and you are trying to determine whether or not the content you've created is violating any rights, you need to know its source, right? So for the output that they have, if that provenance is not available, you using the generative AI, you can't even do that analysis. So that's part of the pressure on the AI model companies in not just waiting for these lawsuits to play out, but making their potential customers comfortable that you can use our AI models and it can produce output that you can then use.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I'm your host, Erin Austin, lawyer, mama of kid and doggy, tennis player, once and future trail runner, YouTube addict, and dreamer. I provide legal tips and bits for turning your expertise into recurring revenue, turning your time-intensive hourly-based business to one that is scalable and hopefully one day saleable is the journey from hourly to exit. This podcast is for experts, consultants, coaches, and other professional services providers with sophisticated corporate clients. If you're investing in the growth of your business, you need advice and resources that address the issues that set you apart from other service-based businesses. Those templates for online businesses don't mean a thing when your client sends their 50-page master services agreement to you for signature. Stop playing small because you don't know how to protect your ideas. Hourly to Exit is here to show you how to navigate the maze of contracts and intellectual property issues so that you can safely and profitably share your ideas with clients and with collaborators. Before we dive in, please remember that this podcast provides general information only. The content of this podcast should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for professional legal consultation. Each legal situation is unique, and the laws and regulations can vary widely by location, and they do change over time. For specific legal advice regarding your individual circumstances, please consult with a qualified attorney who can address your specific needs. Now, let's get started with today's topic. Hello, ladies. Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I have a very special guest today, my law school classmate, Joy Butler. Joy, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Erin. I am honored to have been asked to be a guest.
Well, we're very excited to have you because AI could not be more top of mind for this audience. And so as someone who has written extensively and spoken about AI, I definitely wanted to have you on to go deep. So before we get started, would you introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. So as you already shared, I am an attorney. And in my law firm practice, I provide product counsel services. That essentially means I provide a combination of strategic and legal advice to companies that are going into new lines of business or launching new products or new features of existing products or forming strategic partnerships. And I come by that from two areas of law where I have a deep, in-depth knowledge. And that includes the technology side, where I have worked on and helped to structure probably literally over 1,000 contracts over the course of my career for all the contracts one would need when one is doing business online and in digital technology, including end user license arrangements and terms and conditions. And the other prong of my in-depth legal knowledge concerns entertainment and copyright. And this is where you and I overlap quite a bit. So I work on a lot of creative content contracts, also advise companies on protecting their copyrights and trademarks, and work with companies that want to use someone else's content, doing a lot of work in the rights clearance area. Just to give your audience a little more of a flavor of the types of projects I might work on, most of them are in the digital technology and entertainment space. So a couple of projects include helping an entertainment social media network launch, working with an e-commerce retail site that was incorporating a lot of album cover work and original artwork. Another was an ad-supported stock simulation game. And here's something that may resonate with your audience, helping a professional in the finance area take this niche financial service he was offering and convert it into an online software as a service product.
Cool.
So that is me in a nutshell.
Awesome. When did you first, when I think even tell you the day I first heard about AI, where were you when you first heard about it? What was the context and what were your initial thoughts?
I don't remember the first time I heard about ChatGPT.
Right.
That may be what you're referring to.
Yeah.
But actually within my practice, I have for quite some time been experimenting with trying to take some of my knowledge and develop it into digital tools, making it more accessible to people. As you know, I've written a couple of books on my areas of in-depth knowledge. So one of the things I've been experimenting with is taking some of that knowledge and offering it in a digital format. One experiment that I believe I shared with you was a contest and promotion tool, which asked a number of questions and then gave you kind of a checklist of some of the legal questions you might ask before going forward with that. And I've actually used a tool that a lot of attorneys and, well, it is a interview construction tool targeted to the legal space. It's called DocAssemble. It's actually open source.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a little bit of time tinkering around with that. This is a long way to answer your question. I was familiar with automation and artificial intelligence through that process. But when ChatGPT came to my attention, that may have been around the same time as it came to everyone else's attention. I kept hearing about it and finally tried it.
Right. I guess I'd heard about it, but it was just noise to me, kind of like blockchain or crypto. I don't need to know that. I don't want to know it. Until finally, I could no longer ignore it, which was during an MCLE where, you know, I needed to get some credits, so I wasn't delinquent. And so I'm listening to this one about AI, and it's describing, they were talking about ChatGPT in particular, and they're describing what you could do, and they're having these samples. And I'm like, what? It can do what? And so while I'm still in the, you know, it was online, MCLE, God forbid I go someplace in person. And then I'm on my computer, like doing stuff with it. I'm like, oh my God, this is magic. And that was, well, it was February 2023. And that was my initiation. So what the last year has been actually a fire hose of information and changes in that time. So
yeah, I think ChatGPT, it's the AOL of our times.
Mm-hmm.
It's this technology that's been around for a while, but we finally have this application that has made it a much more accessible and user-friendly for a much wider group of people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, when you think artificial intelligence has been a while, I mean, obviously we've always had autocorrect and things like that, or all those things were artificial intelligence, right? Things like Alexa and Siri, right? I mean, those are versions of it. We just didn't think of it the way that we think of AI now.
Exactly. It's been around for a while. We just finally got a killer app in ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm. Right. Awesome. So a lot of questions that I get are around, where is this data coming from? What is the black box of generative AI in particular we're talking about? And what do I need to worry about? Are they taking my prompts? What are they doing with it? A client who is utilizing it, who's signing an agreement to utilize the contract review AI, like what are the issues regarding using one of those? So everybody has questions about what happens when I use AI? What do I need to worry about? And where does that data come from? And what is my exposure? So I would just like to start from the top. I think most of the audience is familiar with generative AI, but let's talk about what training data is. Where does it get its information from? How does it get in there? And yeah, just start there with a general.
Okay.
Yeah.
when we talk about AI models and some of the copyright and licensing issues, there are kind of two categories. First category is the input, and the second category is the output when we're talking about generative AI. So when you mentioned training material, you're talking about the first category of input. And there has been a lot of controversy over whether or not the training material that is required to train these models can be used without permission. Because what the foundation models do, when I say foundation models, I mean that maybe 8 or 10 models are around that literally have millions of pieces of content that they take into their kind of black box and analyze it so that it can be a general use large language model. Many of these models do is they source that data by getting data from anywhere that they can, including scraping the internet for millions and millions of pieces of data. So there's been, as I said, a lot of controversy around whether or not permission is required for them to do that. And many of these models are relying on now is an argument that their use of that material as training material qualifies as a fair use to the Copyright Act. And I believe there are a number of areas, a number of factors that will gradually push these AI foundation models towards licensing that material. One of them is that there have been a number of lawsuits that have been filed against them, charging them with copyright infringement and other related infractions over their use of this material. And a lot of those suits, well, all of those suits are still pending, and they may take a very long time to play out. I think we're going to see progress towards more licensing prior to that. And that's because people are very anxious to use generative AI. And before they use that, though, they want some comfort level that their use of that material is not going to subject them to any type of a copyright infringement or other claim. So in order to make their customers comfortable with the fact that they can use this material without taking on any legal liability, we are seeing more and more of these AI companies gradually move towards licensing the content.
I want to follow up on that. Before, I'm going to step back just a second because you said large language models, and then we have machine learning and we have generative AI. Are those synonyms or are they all different elements of AI? Okay.
I'm not the expert here, but I'll share with you my understanding. So the large language models, they are the general models that can process the generated output. So that means they take all of the input, all of that training material, and they basically analyze it to see what the relationship of each data point is to this other data point. So when you ask it to produce something, it is estimating or putting forth its analysis of what word should come next or what should come next in this particular graph, which is why it needs so much training material from which to learn.
Got it. Okay. Now, you mentioned going back to where it's going towards licensing because users of AI, generative AI, want to know that they're not going to get sued and they use the output. What does that mean for all of the current data that has been scraped from the internet and all these places previously? I mean, isn't the data sets and our use of AI as is almost like too big to fail? What could happen with these lawsuits that are happening right now? If there are billions of pieces of, let's say, pirated information in, say, the ChatGPT, OpenAI's training data set, what could the possible remedy be if they lose?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do want to separate this into two categories again, because when we talk about infringement, there are two separate questions. The first question being whether or not just the process of the AI companies taking in data as training material and using it to train their model, whether or not that's copyright infringement. That's one question. And then the second question is, if you as a user of these models, if you produce content and use it to produce generated content, is there any legal liability for you? Now, there are circumstances that could be imagined where it's possible for the AI model's training data to be considered a fair use, but maybe the way you've used it in creating output is infringing or violating in some way. I'm not saying that scenario has actually come up or may come up often, but one can imagine a set of circumstances where that might be true. Puzzle back to your original question, where is all this going? What are the potential remedies? Well, one remedy with respect to these lawsuits is that they will settle with a lot of these companies, because the companies that have sued them have been the largest companies with the most resources and very large organizations like the Authors Guild. So they may settle, come to some agreement on what a settlement fee should be. And it's also possible that part of their settlement might be a licensing agreement going forward. That resolves matters for the large organizations that have sued and the large private companies. If it's an organization or association representing much smaller players, it remains to be seen how much might flow to them as part of any judicial settlement. It may be that, as opposed to a private settlement, we might get some sort of a judicial settlement. I think it's perhaps less likely, but it might be one of the outcomes. And that might be a settlement like something that was proposed in Google Books. Now, the Google Books lawsuit, if anyone remembers this lawsuit from 2015, this is the lawsuit that came out of Google Books starting its program where it digitized millions of books and used them and still uses them today to give us snippets of books in response to our search. So that is one of the cases on which a lot of these AI model companies rely when they argue that their use of the training material is a fair use. For those who remember, the Google Books case initially tried to resolve itself via a judicial settlement agreement that would have permitted the snippets of those books and allowed the digitization. But that judicial settlement, or the private settlement that was proposed, went very much beyond just providing snippets, which is one of the reasons that it was ultimately not approved by the court and kept going on and ultimately said, okay, well, we're stripping out all this extra stuff you tried to do in this settlement, but as consolation, we decided Google Books that your use is a fair use. So it might be that some of the parties try to move in that direction of some type of a settlement that encompasses both small and larger players. Some of the other types of resolutions that have been thrown out include kind of a collective that would be parallel to the way we collect public performance royalties in the music industry. So for example, when a song is performed on the radio, all songwriters receive some income from their songs they've written being played. Well, the radio station is not going out and entering into license agreements with the millions of songwriters. They have collectives, in the case of music, ASCAP and BMI and a couple others that have these collective agreements where they issue blanket licenses. So something like that has been proposed potentially for the training material space. So that brings in both rights owners with very large catalogs and rights owners with very small catalogs. The Copyright Office had a comment period where it asked a bunch of industry players what they thought of this. And most of the people who commented were very much in favor with direct licensing or perhaps even aggregated licensing. Now, that may be in part because that's where larger companies are going to get kind of the premium license fees, because the direct licenses we've seen to date have been between AI model companies and very large organizations for millions of dollars. Just like the what we're talking about in the collective licensing example, those very large companies are not going to enter into license agreements with millions of small players. Hopefully, there'll be some balancing where they too can participate. One potential example of how this might be alleviated is through aggregators. So one aggregator we have right now is the Copyright Clearance Center, which is aggregating scientific papers for use in training material. And that allows smaller rights owners to participate in having their material and being paid for their material to be used as training material, if that's what they choose to do. An example in this space I've seen come forward as a startup is called Zapier. And that is a startup that is dedicated to getting those smaller rights owners, giving them the opportunity to participate in being a part of training material and making that training material more accessible to both the large AI models and, the smaller AI companies that might have fewer resources and not be as able to compete when, license agreements are going for millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like this would all have to be perspective. I mean, if the AI companies have been scraping the internet for we don't know how long, and is it even able to distinguish one piece of data in the data set from another? I don't know. Like, how would you compensate all the information that's already in there? And in order to parcel out payments, whatever fraction of a penny that I might get for something. And going forward, if you are a small content creator, kind of your everyday content creator, like the audience here, it would then be on you to make sure that your content is registered somewhere. So you'd be part of some aggregator that has a license who is getting paid by the AI companies.
Okay. So several issues in that question. Okay, let's go with that first part where you talk about kind of the provenance. What was the source of the data? Is it even traceable?
Right.
And this is one of the pain points. And this is also where that analysis about whether your output subjects you to any type of liability. So back up for a second. If you are any type of content creator, and you are trying to determine whether or not the content you've created is violating any rights, you need to know its source, right? So for the output that they have, if that provenance is not available, you using the generative AI, you can't even do that analysis. So that's part of the pressure on the AI model companies in not just waiting for these lawsuits to play out, but making their potential customers comfortable that you can use our AI models and it can produce output that you can then use. And so part of having to do that is knowing the provenance. Now, the extent to which they currently do that, I don't know. AI model companies have often been quite opaque and not very transparent about how the sausage is being made. On the outside, though, like again, as another example of where the industry is going, there has cropped up another kind of startup in this space called Fairly Trained, which is offering certification for AI model companies that have produced their models relying solely on an authorized data set. And the theory is if you are a company that wants to leverage AI, you can get more comfort in knowing that you're relying on an AI model, an AI company that is fairly trained. Now, the last time I checked, there were only a few dozen companies that had that certification, but that may grow.
So maybe enterprise users would go for the fairly trained type because they're much more concerned, frankly, than most everyday users about the quality of that output. It seems like if they're using it to create public-facing materials, they would want that fairly trained data set behind it. Do they also give reps and warranties when you go through them regarding the quality of the output? Do they give representations and warranties?
Does fairly trained provide it?
Anyone who, well, fairly trained or someone who has licensed their data from fairly trained, would they then, in their terms of use, have representation?
So no, Fairly Train doesn't license data. Fairly Train is a certification program. So if an AI company wants this certification to show everyone that they have relied on an authorized data set, then this is a certification that they can apply for.
Got it. Okay. Because I believe that there are some platforms that do provide indemnification, although they have a bunch of provisos. Where is that going so that users feel more comfort there?
Right. So, I mean, I think that's part of their responding to this pain point of needing to make their customers more comfortable with using their product. They are providing certain indemnifications. It remains to be seen how effective those indemnifications would be if a customer were actually sued. And as you mentioned, they do have a lot of exclusions. Personally, I think that is just sort of an intermediate stopgap, and they are going to be pushed more towards more licensing of their data sets. And I would say, while we wait for this to play out, I mean, as you know, this lawsuit could take and probably will take a very long time. The Google Books case, for example, on which the AI companies are relying, took 10 years before finally reaching that conclusion that Google Books digitization was a fair use. So I would say, in the interim, AI companies and those producing AI models should look more to using authorized data sets for construction of their models and authorized data sets with a traceable provenance, so that their customers, when using the output or wanting to put the output into use, can know what the source is and do that analysis of, is this violating any copyright? Is this violating any right of publicity or trademark or anything else? I would say, for the companies that want to leverage AI, when you're looking for partners, you do want to look at partners who are using authorized data sets. Right now, what I see is that a lot of companies, brands, companies in the film and television industry that are actually leveraging AI, and it is being leveraged, but they're using it for a first draft, for a proof of concept, for things that are iterative and you'll need to be turned around very quickly. But they're not using it as part of the final consumer-facing output, just due to those copyright reasons, both the reasons we just discussed, fear of having any type of legal liability, but also because there are limitations on the degree to which you can protect output that's generated by artificial intelligence.
Right. So when they have a authorized data set, and does the output come with footnotes? With what does that look like? Do you know? Have you seen what that looks like? Tell us what the sources are.
Output come with it.
Like, does it identify?
I see. When is an authorized data set? Right. To my knowledge, it is not coming with anything. And you're talking about the Fairly Trained component, right?
Yeah.
It is not coming with anything, but that does need to be a path toward which we're traveling. And there has been like a lot of conversation about that in this space, that it needs to be marked, needs to be traced in terms of what was the source, what did you rely on to do that?
Yeah. As far as the magic that happens inside of a generative AI platform, do we know what that is? Or is that kind of the trade secrets of each company's? Or is there general technology that makes the magic happen?
I am not the expert on the technology inside of the AI models. I can share what I know. In part, it does depend on the approach that they've used, whether it's supervised learning or unsupervised learning, which, to make it very simple, depends on how much you assisted the machine. Like, did you mark things and tell them this is a dog and this is a cat? Or did you just give them like kind of millions of pictures and kind of let them figure it out? When you let them figure it out, when it's unsupervised, it is more of a black box in terms of how they got to that answer, which brings up all sorts of other societal issues.
Right.
To contemplate about AI.
Interesting. Can we wrap up with some best practices just for your everyday kind of ChatGPT? What is the Google on Genesis? What is it? User, like when they're using it for this audience, the expertise-based business, maybe they're using it to create first drafts or to help them with social media posts or something like that, like just some general best practices.
Sure. You want to be circumspect about any confidential or proprietary information you include in a prompt. You may want to anonymize it. You need to keep in mind that whatever output you get from the AI model may not be eligible for copyright protection. If this is something material or output that you are passing on to a client or to a customer, you may need to disclose that use. And you have to make sure that you're using the AI output, depending on the extent to which you're using it. Are you using it just for a little bit of assistance in modifying a few sentences, or are you actually producing images with it or producing an entire report with it? You're going to want to make sure that your procedures for like using the generative AI are consistent with the contract that you have with your customer. If you want to know whether or not your material, your prompts are being incorporated into the training data and being used to further train that AI model, take a look at the terms and conditions. To give you an example for ChatGPT, if you're using the free model and it is recording your history of your prompts, then the prompts that you put in there are subject to being included as part of future training data.
Yeah. So if on the left-hand side there, you have this scroll through and see all your, which of course I have, that means it is going into the training data. That is excellent.
I can't say with certainty that it is going into the training data, but I would say it is susceptible to being used for the training data. Just like they have not provided you, ChatGPT has not provided you any representation that they will not use it for training.
Right. Very good. Thank you for making that distinction. Thank you for this. This podcast is to help create a society that is, and an economy that works for more of us. So I love to ask my guests if there is an organization or a person who is doing the good and hard work to help make an economy that works for more of us. Is there one that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. I really like organizations whose mission it is to bridge the digital divide. And one of my favorite is Girls Who Code, that has, as part of its mission, introducing more women into the technology field. And that's very apropos to our conversation today, because as part of making AI beneficial for all humankind, we really do need a diverse perspective.
Yeah. I mean, we know that just when we talk about the Trina dating sets, like what data is going in there? Obviously, what the output is only as diverse as the input, right? And how it's being trained. And I know that has come up in a number of controversial ways as well about whether something's leaning this way or that way. But we definitely want to make sure everyone has a voice in the future. Thank you for that one. Sure. And we will put that in the show notes along with how people can reach you. Where do you hang out, Joy? And how can people get in touch with you to find out more?
Sure. So I'm always happy to chat with people doing innovative things with technology, especially in the digital technology, online, and entertainment space. So they can find me through my website, which is www.joybutler.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Joy Butler.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And yes, everyone, please follow Joy and let us know if you have any other questions about AI. I know it's constantly evolving. There's always going to be something new, and we can continue this conversation in the future. Thanks again, Joy.
Thank you.
This week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast is sponsored by the NDA Navigator. Non-disclosure agreements, also known as NDAs, are the bedrock of protecting your ideas and your business's confidential information.
Of course, I recommend that you have a lawyer review any agreement before you sign it. However, facing a constant stream of NDAs can be overwhelming, especially when time and budget constraints prevent you from seeking full legal review. That's where the NDA Navigator comes in. Designed specifically for entrepreneurs, consultants, and business owners with corporate clients, the NDA Navigator is your guide to understanding, negotiating, and implementing NDAs. Empower yourself with legal insights and practical tools when you don't have the time or funds for a full legal review. Get 20% off by using the coupon code H2E at protectyourexpertise.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for the resources and organizations mentioned during the episode. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please subscribe so you get notified of new episodes every week. And I would be so grateful for a rating and review, and it helps get the word out. See you next week.